Temple Beth Zion Beth Israel supports WHYY and announces the next in their Sicha author series. Liel Leibovitz in lyrical conversation with Tom Moon, music contributor to NPR's All Things Considered. Wednesday, May 20th at 7 p.m. Leibovitz's A Broken Hallelujah, Rock and Roll Redemption, and the Life of Leonard Cohen is a meditation on Cohen's music and his ideology, revealing why he is revered like precious few living artists. Tickets at bzbi.org.
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, many Philadelphia mayoral candidates want officers to end stop-and-frisk policing, though a key expert says it can't be eliminated completely. First, President Barack Obama was in Camden today to talk about community policing and his vision for strengthening it across the country. As WHYY's Aaron Mozell reports, the president also wants to restrict the flow of military hardware to local police.
In 2011, budget woes forced Camden's police department to cut its force by almost half. The following year, the small city set a new record for murders. Today, the old city department has been replaced by a county-run one that's more focused on community police relations. President Obama says Camden is now a symbol of promise for the nation.
When you match courage with compassion, with care and understanding of the community, like we've seen here in Camden, some really outstanding things can begin to happen.
As of this spring, violent crime is down 36% in Camden compared to 2012, murders by 50%. Obama says those gains have been a bright spot for residents and officers.
They're enjoying their jobs more because they feel as if over time they can have more of an impact, and they're getting more help from the community because the community's seen them and knows them before there's a crisis, before there's an incident.
The president's remarks came hours after his administration released a lengthy report emphasizing the need for improved outreach and community policing in high-crime areas. Among the recommendations, that police serve like guardians, not warriors, and work collaboratively with the community. The president also wants to bar local departments from using federal funds to buy armored vehicles or high-caliber weapons. Camden also recently became one of the country's newest promise zones. That makes it easier for the city to secure federal funding for initiatives aimed at tackling quality of life issues. Addressing some of the underlying factors tied to the city's long history of violent crime will likely be part of those efforts. I'm Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
In Philadelphia, four elected officials have been arrested on charges of fraudulently casting votes in last year's general election. Prosecutors say the four were trying to correct a six-vote discrepancy. District Attorney Seth Williams says there were six more voter book sign-ins than machine votes, so they forged six ballots. Williams' message to election officials, if there's a discrepancy at the polls, do not take care of it yourself.
There are six less votes on the machine than signatures. Just let it stay at that. Let us try to figure that out later, as opposed to just voting for whoever you want six times. That is a crime.
The illegal votes did not change any outcomes in the November election. The officials charged with fraud have been replaced in advance of tomorrow's primary. And the election tomorrow is a big one in Philadelphia, where voters will nominate candidates for mayor, as well as city council and a host of lesser-known offices. WHYY's Katie Culinary explains why candidates will be spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to get voters to the polls and put little pieces of paper in their hands.
So it's election day and you're at home minding your own business when all of a sudden you get a phone call or a knock on the door telling you to go vote. Then on your way to the polls, you might see folks in brightly colored t-shirts handing out sample ballots. Candidates you've probably never heard of have spent a small fortune to get these people to interact with you.
Most people, if they knew the back end of campaigns, probably wouldn't vote again in their lives.
Democratic campaign advisor Joe Corrigan says what most voters don't realize is getting out the vote isn't cheap. Volunteers need to be fed. They need t-shirts and stuff to hand out. And some campaigns will write big checks to ward leaders, the feudal barons of city politics, to boost turnout and to get coverage. That's people standing at every polling place handing out their literature. West Philadelphia ward leader Sonny Campbell says he's been offered as much as $50,000 from some candidates. Even an endorsement from the city's Democratic Party comes with a price. Judicial candidates, for example, shell out $35,000 each. Democratic political consultant Dan Siegel says this is how Election Day turnout works in big cities and in small towns.
The Democratic Party asks its endorsed candidates to make a contribution towards the Get Out the Vote efforts. And that's not specific to Philadelphia, and that's not specific to urban areas at all. You know, these things cost money.
Katie Colinari, WHYY News.
SEPTA Chief of Police Tom Nestle today addressed questions about objects being thrown at SEPTA trains. Minutes before last week's fatal Amtrak crash and just a few miles away, a SEPTA train bound for Trenton was halted after an object broke its front windshield. Nestle says rock throwing is hardly rare.
This is not unusual, unfortunately. It's dangerous, but not unusual.
He says SEPTA and Amtrak police patrol some of the nearly 200 miles of track the two companies share, but he says it's Amtrak's job to repair broken fencing.
Are the fences going to be defeated? Are our methods going to be defeated to keep a motivated person that wants to get in there? Yes, they will.
The NTSB is still investigating whether Amtrak train number 188 was struck by a projectile before its fatal derailment last week. Nestle wouldn't say whether the two incidents were related. All the front runners in the race to be Philadelphia's next mayor agree that the police practice known as stop and frisk needs to end. Law enforcement experts say that may make nice political speech, but it's not realistic, as WHYY's Bobby Allen explains.
The first thing to understand is that though it's often talked about together, a stop and a frisk are two separate things. A stop is self-explanatory. An officer asks a pedestrian questions when the officer senses something suspicious. It's supposed to be a temporary interaction. A frisk is a pat-down of someone's outer clothing when an officer thinks a person has a weapon. These things have been going on as long as there have been police patrolling streets, says law professor David Harris.
Supreme Court said in the appropriate situation with reasonable suspicion, you could do these things in order to make sure that you were protecting citizens against crime and you were protecting the officer against the presence of a weapon.
Harris teaches at the University of Pittsburgh. He's written books on racial profiling and police tactics. He says lawsuits have shown that police stop and frisk overwhelmingly in minority neighborhoods. And in Philly, as the city's own reporting shows, more than a third of them are done without the right level of suspicion. So it's politically convenient to make it a target. However,
you will never get, nor would you want, stop and frisk to not be part of the police officer's toolkit. It's an important thing to be able to do in the right circumstances. On the other hand, if it is overused, it has a high cost because it's a very personal and sometimes very dangerous encounter.
And that's an important point. It's possible to back off stop and frisk, but not really possible to scrap it altogether. But as a campaign platform, saying you'll de-emphasize something might sound wishy-washy to voters. When asked what he makes of the candidates taking aim at stop and frisk, here's how Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey responded.
Well, again, it ignores the reality of gun violence in this country, in Philadelphia in particular. So we need to find the right balance and make sure that officers are conducting themselves and going about their work within constitutional guidelines. And that's the key.
Ramsey's been an advocate of community policing, walking beats, and getting to know the neighbors. Doing more of that, Harris says, will just naturally make stopping and frisking less prevalent.
When they have rich information about what goes on in the neighborhood when they're not there, then they don't have to frisk every kid that comes along. They can actually know which people are dangerous, which people present the possibility of crime, and look at those people and see if there is something that makes them suspicious.
In New York City, Bill de Blasio pledged to end the, quote, stop and frisk era in his campaign to be mayor. And last year, there were nearly 50,000 stops there, about a tenth of the number at its height. But it underscores what Harris says. Even when you try to get rid of the policy, it will never really go away. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Turning to this evening's headlines, a ban on standardized tests in kindergarten through second grade moves one step closer to becoming law in New Jersey. The Senate Education Committee passed a measure today that prohibits such tests. The Assembly passed a similar bill in March. The panel also approved a handful of other measures aimed at the Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers, or PARC, tests. One measure prohibits withholding state aid based on a school's participation rate on standardized tests. Other legislation requires the state provide parents with detailed information on which standardized tests to expect each year. In Delaware, legislative budget writers will have a little more money to work with than previously thought, following an increase in the state's projected revenues for the fiscal year starting July 1st. The increase of about $18 million is due almost entirely to higher estimates for corporate income taxes, along with slight upward adjustments in real estate transfer and cigarette taxes. Lawmakers will begin marking up Governor Jack Markell's budget proposal tomorrow. Gray skies, 68 degrees on Independence Mall. It's 6:17. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. This evening, cloudy skies with a 50% chance of showers, low overnight around 63 degrees. Tomorrow, a likelihood of periods of rain, otherwise cloudy. Tuesday's high in the mid-80s. Sunshine returns on Wednesday, but cooler, high around 72 degrees. Thursday, intervals of sun and clouds, high 68. Sunny on Friday, high in the mid-70s. And for Saturday, plenty of sunshine, high 76 degrees. Still ahead, we'll meet a Roman Catholic priest who spent 30 years as a Lutheran pastor, but has moved on to three parishes in Wilmington with his wife.
The hardest part, I think we would both say, was telling our elderly parents.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Supports WHYY and encourages listeners to discover how a master's degree in pastoral clinical mental health counseling can help prepare adults for professional licensure and roles in community counseling. Designed to integrate psychology and spirituality, this ecumenical program is open to people of all faith traditions. There's an information session on June 3rd at Newman's campus in Delaware County. Details are available at newman.edu.
Do you remember your first time?
My first time? First time of what?
My first time ever?
It's a little uncomfortable. Should I talk about it now?
Your first time listening to NPR's Morning Edition, that is.
People just talking like normal people, telling me about the world.
There's always one story that makes me wake up.
No matter how many times you've listened, listen again each weekday to Morning Edition from NPR News.
Join us for NPR's Morning Edition, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on WHYY.
I'm Dr. Russell Kaufman for the Wistar Institute, a proud supporter of WHYY. With the opening of our new seven-story Robert and Penny Fox Tower, Wistar Science is able to accelerate its efforts to create new cancer therapies. Our discoveries can help understand why cancers spread and are the basis for new Wistar drugs that target and attack the cause of advanced prostate cancer. Learn more about Wistar Science at wistar.org. Wistar Science saves lives.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. As the Roman Catholic Church in America grapples with a shortage of men seeking the priesthood and a rapidly aging clergy, a small number of already married men have received permission from Rome to serve as priests. WHYY's Mary Cummings Jordan headed to Wilmington on a recent Sunday to visit Father Leonard Klein, a former Lutheran pastor.
On a beautiful, chilly spring morning, the ancient language of Rome was being sung at St. Patrick's Church. Several hundred people, many of them women with heads covered in lace, filled the pews for the traditional Latin Mass. Father Leonard Klein is administrator of three congregations, including St. Patrick's, and his path to the priesthood was anything but traditional. He was a Lutheran pastor for 30 years. And he's married, one of perhaps a couple hundred married Roman Catholic priests in America. Father Klein says he was happy as a Lutheran, but always felt an attraction to Catholic theology, and eventually the church's positions on abortion and what Klein calls the clear sense of authority in its teachings.
Sort of by a slow process of evolution, found myself with, you know, a toe, then a foot, then an ankle in the Tiber, and finally
finally crossed over.
Klein's wife, Krista, felt the same pull, as did two of their adult children. And eventually, the somewhat difficult decision was made to enter the Catholic Church.
The hardest part, I think we would both say, was telling our elderly parents.
To tell your parents in their 80s, when they are beginning to lose all of, you know, lose their mental capacity and their understanding of complex arguments, is very painful.
But the parting from their Lutheran flock was, for the most part, amicable, with a dash of levity.
One woman on the council, whom I'd known in a professional capacity before she'd joined the church, said, "I'm happy for you. We knew how much you were suffering."
And Krista says the welcome from the Catholic congregation was overwhelmingly warm. In fact, in an unscientific poll outside St. Patrick's Church, we found a lot of support for the married Father Klein. Anne Marie Dominic is a lifelong parishioner.
I love it. I think all priests should be able to be married if they choose to. You know, this is the 21st century. We're not back in the 16th century anymore.
Christina Holdnack says Father Klein is a wonderful priest, and she's grateful to have him serve. However, in general, she agrees with the tradition that priests are unmarried.
And being a married woman, I see how, you know, there's a lot of responsibility in having a family, having a wife, a spouse, you know, that would take your time and energy that maybe God, you know, wants it this way, so because the priest can dedicate his life to the church.
There are some restrictions to being a married Catholic priest.
When the bishop receives permission to ordain a married man, the letter from Rome says that preferably this priest is not to be in full-time parish ministry so as not to confuse people, and not normally to be appointed a pastor.
And if Krista should pass away first, Leonard cannot remarry.
I take the same vow as all the other priests, which is not to get married.
There are sacrifices to be made. I share them with the bishop. You know?
Yeah, probably the bishop more than the congregations.
I don't feel like I'm a second-class citizen. I really feel that our marriage is very much even richer than it ever was, because this is a joyful experience.
So far, very few married clergy apply to become Catholic priests. So it doesn't seem that the Vatican or the American Church are looking to this to solve the priest shortage. The Kleins say there is one thing they miss about their lives in the Lutheran Church.
The music.
I would say, you know, what Krista said, that we do miss some of that rich musical tradition and a tradition of people singing more heartily.
Father Klein says celibate priesthood is not necessary dogmatically. Still, he doesn't see young seminarians being allowed to marry anytime soon, but rather a continued openness by the church to those in his situation and other viri probati, Latin for tested men. Mary Cummings Jordan, WHYY News.
NASA is closing in on closing out its grand tour of the 8-plus planets of our solar system. Let's catch up with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, I have June 14th circled on the calendar.
And that's going to be a great day, because on that day, the New Horizons spacecraft will make its closest approach to the planet Pluto, the largest of the dwarf planets of our solar system, formerly known as the planet Pluto. The spacecraft will come within 7,800 miles, which is really fantastic. At this point, the spacecraft is still about 55 million miles away, but that's a tremendous improvement over the Earth's basic distance from Pluto of about 3.6 billion miles. So we really are right up close on the dwarf planet.
Talk about the home stretch. Now, is it going to have to dodge any of the 5 known moons of Pluto?
That's a really great question. As the spacecraft gets closer, spacecraft operators are actually looking at all of the imaging coming in to see if there's any other objects they need to worry about the spacecraft running into. We now have the first photographs of all 5 of the moons of Pluto, Charon, which we've known about since the late 80s, actually, plus the other 4 objects, Styx, Nix, Kerberos, and Hydra, are the other 4. Now, the one of those that we could worry the most about, which would be Charon, is about 650 miles in diameter. The other 4 are no bigger than 20 miles in diameter. But we don't know enough about the system to say that those are the only objects that we might have to dodge.
I imagine it's kind of tricky to dodge at that distance. It takes a while to get the message out and have it received and then sent back.
Yeah, that's true. But a half day is plenty time for us to be able to change a course slightly enough to miss something.
And once a safe orbit is determined, will New Horizons orbit Pluto forevermore?
Actually, no. What happens is it's going to fly right past Pluto, and then it heads out towards what's known as the Kuiper Belt. Now, the Kuiper Belt is an extended region of objects out beyond the outer solar system where we have been able to identify that there are at least five other objects of Pluto's size and maybe slightly smaller. So some researchers believe that there are many more objects of Pluto's size or near Pluto's size in the Kuiper Belt just waiting to be discovered. Some think that there may be hundreds of other objects out there. We simply haven't been able to observe them before.
Derek, you and I are of an age where we remember the TV show Lost in Space. Well, there is a delay in space taking place right now.
Yes, indeed. One of the expeditions that's on board International Space Station right now is sort of stuck in a way, and that is because a Russian Soyuz resupply mission launched about 2 weeks ago ran into some trouble after launch. Once it was launched into what was supposed to be Earth orbit, it began to tumble out of control, and last week it re-entered the Earth's atmosphere and burned up. Well, Russian spacecraft operators are concerned enough about what caused that malfunction to begin to postpone and delay upcoming missions. One of them was that astronauts on board International Space Station were supposed to return to Earth last week, but that's been postponed for at least 2 weeks, and it looks as if there's a domino effect that will affect the next resupply missions as well. Now, there's no real danger for the astronauts on board. They can stay on board. There are plenty of supplies there, oxygen, water, everything needed. Now, the real concern, of course, is right now we're dependent upon the Russian system, and so this puts additional pressure on the development of new astronaut transportation systems so that in case of problems like this, there is a backup to either take astronauts up or bring astronauts back.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring.
That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Vinyakov and Kimberly Haas. Tomorrow evening, we'll look at Pennsylvania's underfunded state workers' pension system, which includes public school teachers, and the impact it will have on education in the state. Now, this reminder, when polls close tomorrow evening at 8, stay with WHYY throughout the evening for complete election results and analysis. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
The Rosenbach supports WHYY and presents Everything is Going On Brilliantly, Oscar Wilde in Philadelphia, an exhibition celebrating Wilde's indelible legacy, on view now through May 24th. Highlights include unpublished works on display for the very first time, new bits of verse, a letter from Wilde to his idol, Walt Whitman, and the earliest published version of The Picture of Dorian Gray. Steps from Rittenhouse Square, the Rosenbach is open Tuesday through Sunday. Details at rosenbach.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Martin Ford says robots are taking our jobs, lots of them.
There's already a hardware store that has a customer service robot that was capable of leading customers to the proper place on the shelves to find an item.
Ford says they could replace some fast food workers, lawyers, even journalists. His book is The Rise of the Robots. Join us.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY-FM.